Welcome to the Corner of Film podcast. I'm Niall from Corner of Film, which is a film website where I write about film. Joining me today is Jack. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Niall.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Oh, wow. Good. Yes.
How are you?
I'm not bad. I am not too bad. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, thank
you. Good?
Yeah. So, Jack, if you please, I would like to start today with our first segment, which is Weekly Watches. So tell me, what have you been watching?
The Weekly Watch. Okay, so I watched two in full. I watched two full films, and then I started two other films, and then they were so bad I turned them off within 20 minutes. I rarely do it, but it was not good. Do you want to know what I turned off?
Yeah, start with the ones you couldn't finish, because that's
okay. Fine. So the first one, which is a real shame because I was really looking forward to it, and we talked about this young man quite a lot on the podcast, but it was Guns Akimbo with Dan Radcliffe.
Oh, that's on my watch list. Is it not good?
It's just, I don't know how to put it. I mean, they obviously have the budget, but I don't know where the budget went. Actually, I do know. The budget went on special effects. Like, it looks great, and you can tell it's, you know, it's not supposed to be a serious film. It's a fun film. But I just, you know, in some films, they kind of date themselves by putting, like, current technology and, like social media stuff. And within the first 5 minutes, it was just, like, rammed full of that. And It was trying really hard to be funny, and it just wasn't really landing. And I was like, I can't sit for an hour and a half of this.
No, I get that. Yeah. Oh, that's
which
a
is
shame.
A shame.
Yeah.
Which is massive shame. And then the other one, which actually I was quite invested in, but Liz was like, no, we have to stop this. And that was Little Man.
Oh, I've got to say, I have seen it years ago, and I am 100% with Liz on that.
Well, again, technology-wise, it's really good. I think I read it came out in 2005, 6-ish.
Yeah, something like that.
So, for those of you who don't know, the premise, well, I don't entirely know because I didn't finish the film, but the premise is, well, there's not a premise. Basically, there's a dwarf character who's definitely physically like played by a dwarf, but they have superimposed another actor's face onto that, and it's really jarring. Like, for 2006, it's
isn't
really
it Marlon,
good.
It's Marlon Wayans, isn't it?
The titular. Yeah.
Oh.
But, like, it's good, but it's where it's not quite there yet for the year. It's like, you can't, that's all you can watch, and it's really distracting.
Yeah. I just remember it being very problematic, even, like, for the time.
I think it's, yeah, of that,
I mean,
mid-2000s.
What, 2005? It's not that long ago, but it's just...
A lot has changed since then.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe it. Like, there's a bit where, doesn't he... So he's pretending to be a child or something?
Yeah, that's that's in the Netflix preview bit.
He's pretending to be a child, and it's something to do with that. He's like a con artist or something.
Yeah, they, like, rob places.
Yeah, and isn't there a bit where he tries to breastfeed from a woman?
Yes.
Like, this is a grown man, supposedly. It's just not right.
A bit of a weird one.
It's just, it's so weird.
Right, now, let me tell you what I have watched and did finish and watched all the way through. So, yesterday I watched Do the Right Thing, which I thought I'd watched, but apparently I hadn't. You know, the Spike Lee film. What a great film, by the way. Like, really...
I've not seen it.
It's it's good. I mean, if you've seen other Spike Lee films and you like them, this is like a classic. I think this is like one of the, it's got to be one of the most like influential films of this kind of like genre. Like, I do, it's almost like a documentary really of the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's so on the money with and actually it's not funny, but I mean, the large theme of the film in the end turns out to be kind of like racism and how black people are treated. And nothing has changed. Literally nothing has changed. And that was, what, 96 that came out?
I was going to say that's like mid-90s, isn't it? So,
yeah. Crazy. Nothing has changed.
That's definitely one that's in the watch list. So I'll bump it up a few.
Yeah, definitely. Spike Lee's a genius. Like, really, he's like in my top directors. I love him. And then secondly, I finally got around to watching Midsommar.
Oh, do you know, that's like top of my list. I'll go into why I've not watched it yet in a minute. But yeah, go on. Give me your thoughts.
I enjoyed it. Not as much as Hereditary. I mean, the only thing you can compare with that is it's the same director, I suppose. But
yeah, I was going to say, so it's Ari Aster. Also an A24, isn't it?
It is an A24, yeah.
Yeah, and it's Ari Aster, the guy who did Hereditary, which...
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, that film was absolutely... I still think about that film a lot. Like, I really, really love that film. It's so unnerving.
It's... Do you know what? With Hereditary, I think the thing that impressed me was... Obviously, there's some great acting in it, like, you know, outstanding.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the thing that really grabbed me about it was you can't usually see the directing unless you're really looking. You can't usually see the director's kind of hand at work. And you could really see the work he'd done, the thought that was put into it, you know. Yeah, that's what really got me with Hereditary. So, so Midsommar, not as good.
It was really good. I really did enjoy it. It's a lot slower. Like, it's a real slow burn. And it's a different kind of... I don't know if it's actually classed as a horror film. It's got horror elements, but I don't know. It is worth a watch. I found the story not as compelling. Like, I don't know. Florence Pugh in it, though, was, like, incredible. Just like Toni Collette was in Hereditary. Like, a real... like standout performance. She really nailed it. So that in itself is worth a watch. But yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah, no, sounds good. I mean, I'll have to watch it and then we'll compare notes.
Yeah, definitely.
After.
What about you? What have you been watching?
Oh, okay. So brace yourself because...
Okay, strapped in.
Right. So I did just mention that's been at the top of my watch list and I've sort of had to put it on hold because those who are sort of following and reading what I put on the site will be aware that there are some big things coming for me. In preparation for one of those big things, I have decided to give the MCU another shake.
Good man.
So I have started watching through all of those in chronological order. So like in timeline order.
No.
I didn't want to do it because I thought, well, the natural way to do it is the order they were released, you know.
Definitely.
But then I thought, well, maybe it'd be interesting to do it another way. Like, I've watched especially phase one and mostly phase two. I've seen them all at least a few times and I've always done it in the order they were released. And I thought, well, let's shake it up a little bit, like make it a bit more interesting maybe.
I suppose it's not like you're going into it like completely blind because I think that's always, it's like Star Wars, wasn't it? Like what? So showing it to someone who's never watched it, what order?
Well, exactly. You know, how does it make the most sense, I guess?
Yeah.
And how is it best? Like, where's the impact? So, I decided to do it in timeline order, which was a little bit weird, but it also meant that I could watch Captain Marvel sooner rather than later, because that's sort of the only main film that I'd not watched.
Okay.
And I know everyone talks about how good it is. So I thought, well, you know, that... Just a bit of excitement. Yeah, go on.
I haven't actually read your review yet. But it was, I mean, I'm assuming, you know, I'm guessing you did follow it around the kind of time it was released, obviously being a film fan. It was, it was really, what's the word? I don't know. There was a real mixed reaction to it. I think
it's
mainly because of the way,
because
of the way Brie Larson kind of went about presenting it on like press junkets and stuff. I don't know, it was a bit awkward actually between like the cast.
She's a bit of an odd one, Brie Larson, but I've got to say I quite like her. I think she's a lot of fun and
I don't dislike her.
So I started a new series of reviews because I figured, you know, they are just reviews. There's not really much to them, but I've just sort of titled them MCU reviews and thought, well, they're just in a slightly separate bracket. And I kind of want to judge them based on themselves, like as individual films, as opposed to just constantly reviewing them as and how this links into that and how, that's interesting, but I don't think a film should stand on the merits of of sort of where it fits into a franchise, really. I think, you know.
But then is Marvel the exception for that, because that was the plan from day one? I don't know.
Well, I think Marvel, probably. It probably is.
I agree, though.
I quite like the idea of looking at them as individual films, because I think it's all too easy to look at a character like Iron Man and say, well, everyone loves Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr. is great and it's really funny and you know, he's really like... When you watch it as a film, the first Iron Man, it's not that great, like, especially when you compare it to later. So this is the problem I've had. So I'm just going to run through the titles of what I've watched so far. I've done Captain America, I've done Captain Marvel, I've done Iron Man, I've done Iron Man 2, I've done Thor. So watching them in that order. No, I can't wait for that. No, I've when I was doing it in that order, so Captain America, a reasonable start. Like, I find it kind of a boring film.
Do you?
To be honest. The first one, yeah. I don't find him... No, that's a lie. I find him a good character. I just... His films, they're always sort of like... I don't know. There's that sort of spy, thriller, political, like... aspect.
Yeah, I suppose.
I just, it's a very different tone to a lot of the others, that it sets it apart, but I also don't find it as interesting.
You're not?
No, and I just, especially that first one, I just thought it didn't really...
Well, and it's an origin story as well, so you've got to kind of sit through the tropes of that.
I don't mind the origin story itself. I don't mind too much. It's more the, like, the way it sort of addresses World War II, the way it uses its characters. You know, you've got very much a good guy and a bad guy, and it's, I don't know, they could have done something a lot more interesting, I think.
Yeah.
But they played it really safe and a little bit lazy. So yeah, Captain America, not my favorite. The review's up if you want to have a read. Captain Marvel, though, I really liked.
Really?
I did find it very jarring, because to jump from sort of phase one to Captain Marvel and then all the way back to Iron Man at the very start of the MCU was really weird.
Yeah, I suppose it's, visually as well.
Visually, but also it's, I mean, Iron Man has aged well in terms of its visuals, I think. But
yeah,
its general sort of attitude is quite, you know, there's a bit of misogyny in there. It's quite subtle, but it's not pleasant. There's, you know, Iron Man, the first one in particular, has no good female characters. None. You've got Pepper Potts, and she's not even a sidekick. She's an afterthought.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it in the first one. And obviously Captain Marvel, being at the end of phase three, is a little bit more enlightened. It's a little bit more sensitive. It's, you know, I think I put in my review that they'd really kind of perfected the art of the superhero movie by then.
Yeah, they know what works.
It's a great film, whether you look at it as MCU or just a standalone sci-fi, you know, action thing. It just works. I like the 90s setting. I like the soundtrack. You know, I couldn't really find anything I disliked about it. Just enjoyable. But yeah, Iron Man, Iron Man 2. Again, they don't... The Phase 1 films aren't as good now when you watch them back, I don't think.
Because I don't know. Maybe it's nostalgia.
I will say... So Iron Man is still enjoyable. Mm. There's nothing wrong with Iron Man. It's just, I don't know. It's kind of, I just find it a bit slow in places, a little bit, okay. Iron Man 2 was actually better than I remembered it. Don't get me wrong.
Iron Man 2 is fun.
Not great, but it gets a lot of hate, and it wasn't that bad. Like, it's
when you get Black Widow.
Yeah, Black Widow's introduced. She's pretty cool. You know, aside from Mickey Rourke's really awful... awful acting. You've got Sam Rockwell. He's good.
Yeah. You know. I forget he's in that.
They finally flesh out Pepper Potts a little bit, which is good.
Mm. Yeah, she's on the you know, they're building her up a bit at that point, aren't they?
Yeah, I just felt like Iron Man 2 kind of improved on everything that made Iron Man popular.
Yeah.
But because it had a bit of a wonky villain, everyone just sort of like, oh, it's no good. It's no, it's, you know. But yeah, I enjoyed that. And Thor, I've got to say, I remembered it as being much better than it was.
Really? So I had the complete opposite. I remember not liking it and then rewatched it recently, and I was like, oh, that was quite enjoyable.
Well, I absolutely loved it. When it came out, I loved it. I thought it was the best superhero film I'd seen. I just thought it was really fun. It was really interesting, like a fresh take on comic book movies. And, you know, it still looks great, but I was sort of watching it. I was actually watching it today, and I just thought, do you know what? It's kind of dull. Like, there's a lot of really boring stuff in it. And I just think Chris Hemsworth really carries the film.
Yeah.
Tom Hiddleston is great, but Loki isn't really a fleshed out character.
Yeah, not at that point.
He's quite a sort of 2D villain in the first film. And it's not until Avengers where they start to make him a bit more interesting that he really comes to life.
He's a fan favorite.
Yeah, he is great. And, you know, I'd never say that he isn't. But in that first Thor film, they didn't give him enough to do. I don't think they just made him a really generic, like...
Yeah, sort by the numbers.
Sociopath, yeah, and it wasn't great. Aside from the MCU, though, I have watched one other film, which was, again, I've reviewed it. It was In Time, the Justin Timberlake.
Oh, I saw that at the cinema.
Yeah, it was my first time watching it. Bit weird.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's sort of all in the review. So for anyone who's not read that, go and check it out. But yeah, great premise. Just
exactly that.
It wasn't, I don't know, it could have been done better, I think. And I like Justin Timberlake as an actor. I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's not bad.
And who else was it? It was
I always forget
Amanda, her name. Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah. Is it that? Really?
I believe so, yeah. Olivia Wilde, actually. Olivia Wilde's in it as his mum, which really confused me, because they're all 25, or they all look 25, and it was all a bit... That was a weird gimmick, that whole, they stop aging thing. But
oh, yeah. I've only watched it once when it came out at the cinema, and I've kind of forgotten about it.
It's the sort of film that I feel like I'd watch, and then I'll watch it again in 3 or 4 years when I've forgotten all the details, and then, you know, just sort of repeat that cycle, like...
Yeah.
Half a decade goes past and I'll consider watching it again. But until then...
That's generous, that is.
Well, yeah, probably. You know. But yeah, so those are my watches.
Nice.
Okay, so I guess, shall we move on to segment two?
Juicy segment number two.
I mean, can you just maybe... Do you want to have a guess at what segment two is called, Jack? I don't know if you remember.
Games begin, they shall.
Excellent. Yes, it is. Let the games begin. Which is a very loose title for a segment, because we just kind of do whatever.
Yeah, it's not really a game this week, but...
Well, sort of.
Yeah, of sorts.
Yeah, of sorts. So, at Jack's request, we're going to talk about musical scores and how music can kind of make or break a film. So, what I thought we could do, Jack, is I thought maybe we could just talk a little bit about films that have good scores, films that have bad scores, you know, that sort of thing. Have you did any spring to mind for you?
Well, I mean, the obvious big one is John Williams, of course, the master. I think definitely my childhood and probably, you know, the generation before, if you think of like favorite films like E.T., Indiana Jones, Star Wars, they all come to mind. And
yeah, that magical... Like,
yeah, and you initially, the first thing for me anyway, when I think of like Indiana Jones or E.T. is I don't think about the character. I instantly, the theme tune is going in my head.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's probably more true for E.T. than anything else. I hear the music immediately. But also, you've got to think John Williams, that's, you know, in terms of generations, Harry Potter, Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, he's... Yeah.
You know, that's going to carry on for a long time.
So, yeah, it's incredible. The amount of work that man has done is literally insane, and he's still going.
And I think his sort of the music he adds to a film, the score that he adds, really elevates kind of what's there.
It definitely does, yeah.
Which kind of leads me into mine,
yeah.
Which I figured you'd say John Williams. So I deliberately went the other way.
Let me guess. Can I guess who you're going to say? I hope it's who I think it is because of our jokes growing up. Is it Hans Zimmer?
Yes.
Is it actually? It
is. That is one of the people I was going to mention. sorry, you've got me thinking about the Hans Zimmer jokes now.
Yeah, exactly.
No, the, you know, scores of films like Interstellar, Inception, just Interstellar in particular, there was this real kind of layered approach to it that you almost don't hear the score when you're watching the film. Like, you feel it, but you don't hear it. Because
I get you.
It's sort of so integral to what's going on that you don't always sort of register that you're hearing it. And I think that's kind of the key to a good score, really. But you've also got, and, you know, again, I've done a lot of trashing of the MCU. And that's more about the business practice of you know, privatizing film. But the actual films they make, and specifically the scores that they use and the soundtracks that they use, are almost always very good.
Yeah, really good.
So, you know, like I was singing Captain Marvel's praises earlier, it's got a great soundtrack. It's got really good 90s songs in there. The sort of climactic fight scene is to No Doubt's Just a Girl, which...
That's it, yeah, I remember.
That was excellent. And there's also a really good just general score to it. And
yeah,
I just think, you know, films like that, those big blockbuster films, they really live or die on a soundtrack. You know, you've got some big battle scene. You can't have a weak soundtrack because it just seems weird.
Yeah, it kind of undersells it. Obviously, the big one, and it still gets me hyped thinking about it now, is the Avengers, their theme song. Like, that is a great score.
Yeah, and, you know, it sort of on the flip of that, a bad score completely ruins a film. Like, completely.
I couldn't think of any.
I found two. Well, I say I found two. I looked around at what other people were saying, and then I listened for myself and was like, oh yeah, that's bad, or that was all right. And a lot of people were saying a lot of things, and I listened and I thought, no, that's quite good. But two of them really stood out as bad. The first is, have you ever seen Babylon AD?
No, I haven't.
No, well, that sort of says it all. it's a Luc Besson, Vin Diesel film. It's like a sci-fi, apocalyptic action thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not great. It's like, did you ever see XXX?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Sort of think that's that kind of thing, and you're not far off.
Right.
Sort of, yeah. And it had this awful, like, really weird, out of place, distracting soundtrack where, you know, you're like, you've got opening credits and it's just Vin Diesel strolling through a war zone with his hood up, and it's just playing some weird, like, sort of budget hip hop, and I was like, what is this? And it just sort of, at regular intervals throughout the film, they just will use a song that just sounds like at odds with what's going on. And you just think, if you just shouldn't had a normal score, like, yeah. And that's a film that is really bad.
Yeah,
and it's I'll avoid that one. It was all right, I guess, but the score really made it pretty bad. The other one that does actually have an awful score, and it's a film I love, and I hadn't really clocked the bad score until I listened back to it. The Princess Bride.
The Princess Bride. I have not seen that. I know that's a crime.
That is criminal.
I know.
That's absolutely criminal. No, so it's a classic film, and I love it, and it reminds me of being a child and being tucked up in bed eating chicken soup, and, you know, sure.
Nice.
But when you listen to the music, I genuinely thought that I was listening to the soundtrack for The Elder Scrolls Oblivion.
Really?
Honestly, if I could put it into the podcast and without risking getting sued or whatever,
yeah,
I would. But seriously, go away. Listen to Inigo Montoya's theme.
What a great name.
He's the guy that, you know, my name is Inigo Montoya. Prepare to die. Mandy Patinkin, and right. Yeah, his character's theme is, I swear to you, that Bethesda ripped it off when they made Oblivion. It is full video game background music,
like proper epic.
Yeah, so they used like a synthesized orchestra, and it just sounds like
synthesized orchestra.
Well, yeah, it sounds like elevator music. It's just not good.
And that's not the kind of music I thought you were going to say when you said you watched The Princess Bride.
No. It really isn't good. So if you listen to that soundtrack, I think, like I was, I think you'll all be very taken aback.
Like, what the hell?
Because I remember it as a film that is so good, and it's so fun and sort of silly in places and funny and, you know, sweet. And it's such a good film. But just a bad soundtrack, I guess. Mm. But those are my kind of good and bad.
Yeah.
So, Jack, what we're going to do today for our game is score imaginary films. What I've done is I've been to several different story generators, like random plot generators, and had them spit out movie plots.
Cool.
And I figured we could talk about how we would go about scoring it. If there's any particular sort of musicians or composers.
Spring to mind.
Yeah, or, you know, just a general sort of style.
Cool.
So I've got them all written down here in front of me, and I'm going to read the prompts as they were spat out by the generators. Now, obviously, I didn't use the really wonky ones because, you know, how do you score a film about a sad lawyer who is crying because his mother bought a pancake?
I don't know, but I won't watch it.
You don't need a score for that. You want that to be like a silent film, yeah. Like pure silence.
Just uncomfortable silence.
Yeah, so we've got five.
Yeah, I struggled with a few of them, can't lie. I've definitely got genres for a few, but as far as standout kind of like artists or composers, I kind of struggled with, but I'll see if any spring to mind as we talk.
Okay, all right, well, we'll start with, unsurprisingly, number one, which is a neo-Western comedy drama. It's about an old, lonely female drifter obsessing over recovering lost memories, and she meets a world-weary sheriff who is a practicing Muslim in rural America. mad as that sounds, I feel like it does lend itself well to comedy drama.
Oh, it's got it written all over it.
You know, I'm picturing this, like, sheriff with his cowboy hat on his way to the mosque. And, you know, so what were your thoughts on a... soundtrack?
My thoughts were Niall's gonna have a good answer for this.
Well, you're not wrong, but
yeah, go on.
Okay, well, I sort of immediately from the weird synopsis got like Southern Gothic vibes.
Okay,
so I was thinking musicians like Colter Wall, Sean James, there's a band called Goodnight Texas that do sort of like neo cowboy music, I guess.
Interesting.
Sort of a mix of like country and soul.
Cool.
And that's kind of what I had, because I figured there's some sort of religious kind of overtones.
Yeah, yeah.
Both the film and that music. And, you know, I just think that would be an interesting, like.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I'd also like to actually make that if.
Well, I don't think anyone's claimed that synopsis. So you go ahead and write that.
Yeah, maybe I will. Yeah. Okay, so are you happy with number one there? Did you have anything to add or?
Nope, you hit the nail on the head there. I like that.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, thanks.
Number two should be easier.
Number two, definitely, because this is right up our street.
Yeah.
Number two is a 90s era comedy. A group of misfits who take over their school. That's kind of all it said.
Yeah, that's quite vague, but then it leaves room for creative liberty.
Yeah, so that synopsis immediately made me think of Columbine.
Yeah, now that's not funny.
Yeah, but it is a comedy, so we'll stay away from like Pumped Up Kicks or.
Yes, although that, you know, very well written song, and it does lend itself. But
it is a great song, but it's not a funny song.
No, it's not. The people don't realise what that song is about.
I mean, should all comedy films only have funny songs in, or
no?
Just Weird Al, just. For the score, yeah, of every comedy.
He should do, him and Randy Newton should do everything.
Yes, definitely. So go on, what were your thoughts on a soundtrack for this film?
I don't know. I think, yeah, you probably could take a different spin on it and not do classic 90s music, but then where would the fun in that be?
Yeah, so you know, you've got a 90s era comedy about a group of misfit teens. You've got to use that like sort of alternative, like pop punk kind of style, like early pop punk. So I mean the names I had for a soundtrack, at least, early Green Day, Bad Religion, The Offspring, No Doubt, stuff like that was kind of soundtrack to like the early 90s, I guess.
Yeah, or you could flip it depending on where the school is and what kind of students there are. You could do some like 90s like hip-hop. You could do like Tribe Called Quest. You could do
Do you know what, Tribe Called Quest are about to make an appearance in my list.
No way.
Yeah, in the next one. Yeah,
what are the odds of that?
But yeah, I think you've got, that's quite a broad scope, but
yeah, you can do loads
for comedy. It depends on your setting, it depends on your characters and stuff, but the 90s is just filled with like perfect music for that.
Yeah, the 90s is great, but also horrifically cringy.
Yeah, but because it's a comedy, you can lean into that. Whereas if it was like a serious film, I think you'd find it really hard. But
yeah, fair.
you just think like American Pie, basically, and dial it back like 5 years. And
they nailed that.
They did. Absolutely. Okay, well, that was number two. Number three is, this is the one I think I had the most difficulty with. I mean, I did have fun with this, but actually, no, I'm going to tell that back. Number five was the hardest. We'll get to that.
Five. Oh, yes.
Number three is an action thriller set in New York in the 80s. A dying cop with a secret plans a heist. That was, yes. That was all we had from the generator. So, go on, Jack, what are your thoughts?
I just want some glam rock. I think Kiss should do the whole thing.
Oh, do you know what? I love Kiss. Like, really unironically love Kiss.
Kiss are great.
I feel it's a bit of a guilty pleasure, but they are great.
Yeah, they are great. I think they'd smash it. I think that'd be great.
Do you know, that's weird, because that was my first thought, was like, well, the 80s is filled with like some real great like rock tunes.
Yeah,
like
massive.
Motley Crue, Def Leppard. You've got some real good stuff going on. And then I thought, no, it's an action thriller. And I think you're going to want it to be a little bit more like maybe gritty, a little bit kind of darker. And then I thought, well, that really limits you with a soundtrack.
It does, yeah.
But I kind of seized on the New York thing, and I wanted to capture that sort of New York in the 80s vibe.
Yeah.
So I just kind of made a note of a few names, Grandmaster Flash and A Tribe Called Quest. But also someone called Nina Hagen. Have you heard of her? She's like a... I don't know.
I honestly can't say that I have.
Like a... I wouldn't even know how to describe it. Sort of like post-disco house music, like early house music.
Mm.
So it's kind of like new wave, synth pop, kind of like early hip hop kind of soundtrack was what I had in mind, to try and capture that like kind of New York scene in the 80s.
Yeah.
I actually stumbled across a couple of really good playlists while I was...
Always good.
While I was looking out. So yeah, let's move on. Number four was... This one was really weirdly specific, and
yeah, it made me laugh,
but I actually thought, you know what? There's probably a decent film in that. It's an apocalyptic romantic adventure. A mysterious grieving stranger with amazing abilities seeks revenge on the remnants of government.
On the remnants of the government. I like it.
Yeah, just any government. Just
any, whatever. Yeah, whatever you want.
Go on, Jack. Hit me with your...
I mean, I'm going to... Amazing abilities, so I kind of instantly went to our X-Men, but not live action X-Men, but the cartoon with the epic theme song.
That's probably the greatest theme song ever.
It is really, really good.
I still hear that when I close my eyes.
Yeah, that is good.
Did you know it's all on Disney Plus? Just
yes, I recently found that. Yeah, but I watched a few the other day.
Yeah, I watched a few. When I got Disney Plus, I watched like the first, I don't know, 20.
So good.
It is. So, yeah, go on. What was your thought? Like that sort
that
of...
That kind of thing, yeah. But then you've got the romantic kind of element. So I don't really know where to spin that one.
I was thinking it's apocalyptic romantic. So you think romance at the end of the world, like...
Okay.
You know, I went a little bit more out there with this. So there's a band that my brother loves, and he's
really
into them. No.
That band always reminds me of your brother.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
No, they're sort of an instrumental band called Explosions in the Sky. Really hard to define music, but... Really beautiful, really atmospheric. They've actually done the score for a couple of films. They did the score for the Friday Night Lights film way back in like 2004,
yeah,
I think. And Lone Survivor was a Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, the Mark Wahlberg one.
Thing. They did the soundtrack for that as well. And I really like their music, and I think they could do a good soundtrack.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
For this sort of thing. But also, this is going to sound weird, so I'm going to have to explain it. But do you remember the band Fight Star?
I saw Fight Star live.
I am so jealous. They were
really, really good.
I absolutely love them. And a lot of people remember them as this like sort of hardcore band.
Yeah.
Quite heavy stuff, because that's kind of how they came out. And that's when they had the most sort of buzz, because... The singer had left Busted, which is a big boy band, and then he made this big sort of
career. Yeah, he left busted for that.
Yeah, and it was people were really shocked, and so people remember them as this really heavy band. Mostly, to be fair, they were, but they did an album called Be Human, which had full orchestral backing, and there is a song in that called Follow You Into the Darkness, or Follow Me Into the Darkness.
Yeah.
And it gives me goosebumps every time. And I've always
said, to revisit that.
Well, I've always said, if I ever make a film, that song will be in it.
Really?
It's a proper, like, it's the sort of song you'd have playing, like, when your protagonist is killed.
Okay.
It always gave me kind of Platoon vibes, you know, like at the end of Platoon where
they're
really just like powerful. It was actually weirdly used in a Jägermeister ad a few years back.
Was it?
So if it sounds familiar, it's the dramatic song from the Jägermeister advert.
From the Jäger ad, okay.
Yeah. But I was thinking one of those two bands would do a good like post-apocalyptic soundtrack.
What about Trent Reznor? He does really good film scores.
He does. He was a consideration, but I felt like, do you know what? He doesn't need my business.
He's got enough, hasn't he?
He's won a couple of Oscars, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
So, yeah, he's not. I'm sure he's sort of batting away the offers. Whereas I thought, like, Fightstar they're a relatively small thing, and they're sort of on like hiatus at the moment. And I thought, you know, if you bring them back for a film, they're back. And That would be great. And Explosions in the Sky, again, they've got some experience doing that, but they're not a massive sort of well-known like outfit, and give them a bit.
Yeah, they're big in the like if you know, you know kind of music area. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, anyone listening, yeah, go check those out, because
check them out.
You know, are we done with number four?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, we'll move on to number five. This is our last one.
This was the trickiest one.
I found this really hard.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a genre for this because I used a different generator, because sometimes, you know, they start getting a bit samey. So I had an old man on the brink of retirement is asked by a long lost friend for a favor that may lead to murder. This prompt I did struggle with, because I thought, how do you score that? Like, we've not got a setting. There's a genre implied, like that's a sort of crime thriller. But they're quite tricky to do. And I thought, well, I was going to go with the really obvious. And I was going to say James Newton Howard, who did, you know, The Dark Knight. And he's got quite a long, long list of credits.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, just some nice sort of general, like
orchestral.
Yeah, The Dark Knight had a great score. But I thought, no, is that basic? That's a basic answer.
Sometimes basic's good, though. Like, I initially thought, like, strings, kind of, not jazzy, but again, that classic kind of, like, noir sound.
Yeah, I wanted to go with that. But then, do you know what I thought? So I've still got James Newton Howard written down, but also next to him is another really out there choice. It's sort of inspired by films like Drive that have that.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't expect that film to have the soundtrack it has, but that soundtrack is excellent.
It is is a well-known and well-loved film now, but yeah, that soundtrack is like one of the best ones, like one of my favorites.
Yeah. And so sort of off the back of that, I thought, well, obviously crime films can work with stuff like that. And like, you look at like Good Time, and there's really something to be said for those kinds of like sort of experimental type music, synthy. And like, yeah, that sort of different sound. And so I thought, do you know who's great?
Who is great?
65 Days of Static.
I don't know that name. Is that bad?
Probably not. No. So they're a British band, but they sort of, one of their biggest things to date is they did the entire soundtrack for the game No Man's Sky, which...
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. I've played a bit.
I know it's got some bad press, but the soundtrack...
You love that game.
I don't know. Love is...
I remember when it came out, you spent a lot of time on that.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I love it. It just means...
It does mean...
And nothing better to do. it's an excellent soundtrack. And, you know, side note, if you're into video games, they have improved that game a lot, so...
It looks great now.
Yeah, they've added a lot in. But yeah, it's worth playing. But the soundtrack is just phenomenal. It's so originally they were sort of a like an instrumental kind of guitar based sort of sound, and they sort of branched out into sort of electronica and a lot more kind of experimental stuff. They just do this really sort of deep atmospheric blend of like styles, and it feels quite timeless. So I thought, again, like I like it when something's a little bit out of the box in terms of filmmaking. I think those risks can really pay off. Like, again, if you look at the Safdie brothers, they work with what's his name? This is a
I've completely gone
Tricks Point Never or something like that.
Yes,
something. If I've got that wrong, forgive me, but I'm not looking it up. But yeah, I think those risks can kind of pay off when you go with something a bit different.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
You know, talking of Drive and soundtracks, so obviously the soundtrack is famous now. Like it's great. I don't know who thought it would be a good idea, but it did anyway. So Zane Lowe had the chance to rescore that film.
Yes.
To which he did. And he put like Bring Me the Horizon on it. And it just takes away, like, it's just such a random soundtrack.
I don't know why you would let some random radio DJ mess with a film like that. Like, that was an excellent film. And
see, I've got four copies of Drive, right? And I sound like such an idiot. Like,
Do you also have the jacket?
Do you know what? I would love the jacket so much.
Well, your birthday's in a few months, so, you know.
Good luck trying to get it. I want the Steady Clothing one. They're the ones who make the product ones. They're really expensive. So I've got a steelbook version of it. I've got, like, a nice collectible sleeve. I've got the regular version. And then they actually released the film with the additional Zane Lowe score on it, as well as having the original one. So you could kind of choose which disc to put in. And I watched it and it just does not work. It feels like a completely different film.
Yeah, I bet. I don't like, I'll be honest, I have absolutely no interest in watching that version.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'm sure there's highlights on YouTube, but it's not good.
No. Well, there we go. And that
But now you know, don't waste your time.
Well, no, that brings us full circle really to how much a score can sort of influence a film. In, you know, Drive had an excellent soundtrack, and if you mess with that, it just doesn't always come out the same way. So
yeah, sometimes risks don't pay off.
No, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I guess that's the takeaway from all of this.
Yeah.
Risk if you want, don't if you don't want. Shall we move on?
let's crack on.
Well, the next segment, and I'm going to say the name this time, is segment number three. It's called What's Going On?
You remembered it.
I remembered it, Jack. What's going on?
Well, amongst many things, the one that kind of I was thinking about talking about, I mean, we kind of talked briefly about it, was the whole Scarlett Johansson Disney situation where she is... Actually, I think something came of it today, like some progress in the case, but basically she's suing Disney for kind of grey area in her contract regarding Disney releasing it to Disney Plus before it had its complete run at the cinema, thus losing her a lot of money.
Exactly. Well, can I just say, before we really go into it, I had these news items ordered in a way that I could segue from one to the next beautifully.
I'm so sorry. And do you want me to muck it up some more?
No, that's fine. So, yeah, Scarlett Johansson is not happy with The House of Mouse, which I can't say.
I don't blame her.
No. There's so much to this.
Yeah.
It's such a massive... We could do an hour's podcast just talking about this.
Easy. But,
yeah, her projected losses from her team have worked out is about $50 million.
Wow.
So I guess worth a lawsuit.
That's big money.
It's difficult, this, because it's very unclear as to who's in the wrong, because so much of it is done behind closed doors that we don't know what the contract says. But the general consensus is that she is fighting for the talent.
Yes.
because, and again, this comes up in a couple of different ways, actually, in the news for this week, in the way the world is working now and the way that cinema is working and all of it is basically that they're trying to, you know, simultaneously release things in theaters and on home streaming.
Mm.
And I mean, personally, I feel like they're doing the best they can. You know, I think sort of that I appreciate that the theater kind of option is there, but also there are a lot of people who aren't comfortable with that yet. And
yeah,
it's also in terms of sort of public safety. I think if, you know, the various distributors and whatever, they weren't looking at ways to kind of offer an alternative, I think they would be sort of indirectly kind of responsible for any, you know, further like outbreaks or,
yeah,
you know, it's in everyone's best interest, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, for them to do this. And I understand being upset with them that, you know, they might, some of the actors and the directors and whatnot might have lost some money on this, yeah. But it's
I think what adds to this particular case, though, is it was such a long time coming for Scarlett Johansson. Like, people have wanted a Black Widow film since, you know, she came out in Iron Man 2. She's such a great character, and she is the original woman, really, in that franchise.
Yeah.
And to have it, you know, they've finally given her one, even though her character was already killed off in Endgame. Like, so I found this with Solo. There's no real stakes because you either know, you know what happens. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, if you know what happens, you go in with one mindset, and if you don't, then you go in fresh. And it is a good. I mean, I've not seen it yet, so.
No, neither have I. I want to go see it at the cinema because I've seen all the MCU films there, and it is a completely different, you know, that is kind of what blockbusters are for.
So again, it all sort of comes back to, for a long time now, actors have taken deals where they are paid a certain amount up front and then they're given a percentage of whatever profits. And that makes sense for everyone, really, because, you know, if a film is to flop, then that sort of mitigates some of the damage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, films like John Carter that are notorious for having lost, like John Carter itself lost Disney hundreds of millions total. And you think if you've got, especially something like, you know, Avengers, you're paying however many A-list stars.
Big money.
You know, I believe for Endgame, Robert Downey Jr. took like 9 million up front.
Yeah.
And he got an extra like 50, 60 million in like additional.
Well, and that's without all the extra stuff that comes with it, like merchandising royalties and
You know, it makes sense for everyone because, you know, if a film was to fail, then the studio don't have to pay out as much.
It's like a safety net.
Yeah, but equally, it doesn't necessarily protect the actors because, and again, we don't know what's in the contract. We don't know how it stipulates about the release. For all we know, this contract was signed years ago before release to home stream was ever sort of conceived.
And yeah, true.
If Disney have done something underhanded to screw Scarlett Johansson out of $50 million,
then I wouldn't put it past them.
No, and do you know what? No matter what, however I look at it, I can't root for Disney.
No.
She is an individual who has spent years and years of her life now. What are we looking at? What, 15 years nearly?
No. Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, 12 years, something like that. Working as, she's been part of the MCU for that long. And, you know, it's not fair for her that this is her kind of last thing. I've read that she's not signed up for any more like cameos or anything. So it looks like this is the end for her with this.
It's a sad end.
She's not going to know where her career's going after this. I mean, odds are she's going to be fine. But,
oh, yeah, she'll be fine.
You know, it might be that she can't get any more work because she's being typecast, or that the whole experience has soured her on acting. And, you know, you just don't know. And, it's impossible not to root for her, really. And I guess we'll see. I'm sure it'll all come out sort of over the course of the... of whatever.
It's a lengthy thing.
Unless it's settled out of court, which it may well be. We'll see.
Very briefly, going back to what you said, yeah, you said, you know, that it was on paper and probably is now her last entry as that character. Like, I'm sure she doesn't want to go near it anymore. And it's actually, at the moment, it's the second lowest earning Marvel film behind The Incredible Hulk, which is not saying...
That's telling, isn't it? And the thing is, it... Again, you see this in another of the news items today. Home streaming is hurting the bottom line.
And it is, yeah.
I think, sort of, in general, anyone in the industry and us as consumers, we need to sort of understand that things are different for everyone. You know, the average person right now doesn't have the same amount of money they had 3 years ago in their pocket.
No.
You know, like, I'll be honest, I looked at Black Widow on Disney Plus and I thought, do you know what? I don't want to spend, it's like $30, isn't it? So it's like,
yeah.
I don't know, for us, like, what, £25, yeah. something like that. And, yeah, that's not bad. That's around what we'd pay me and my partner to go see it in the cinema. But I don't want to shell that out.
No. See, I'm really torn because this is going to sound really awful and like I'm being a real snob. And I'm not, because trust me, I don't earn very much money at all. Like, I waste my money in other ways. But I feel like cinema and stuff like that, it's a luxury. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're not entitled to go to the cinema. Like, it's kind of like a, I don't know. That sounds really awful, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a necessity to go to the cinema. But then on the same, it's the same with like going to watch like a football match. Tickets for that are crazy money, but then you also have the option to watch it at home, albeit you have to pay an extortionate TV license fee in the long run.
Yeah.
But there is that option, isn't there?
Well, exactly. And I guess it sort of comes back to the idea of home streaming films, sort of releasing them to home streaming for these exclusive platforms. I sort of see it as studios trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Yeah.
There was a big uproar about Warner Brothers doing it, making a deal with HBO Max.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing that annoys me about that is that HBO Max hasn't been available to us in the UK at all. And so there are so many films that I was waiting to see that I have not been able to see because short of, you know, watching them illegally, which I'm not going to do, it just sort of ruins that experience. And the idea that Disney have done it in a way that, you know, there are people who can't necessarily get to the cinema. There are people who are isolating, who've been looking forward to this film for years and, you know, they still get it. And I get that, but that has to be reflected in what they do for their talent. And, you know, I don't see how, I think if Disney win this, it will be by doing something as underhanded as, you know, screwing her out of the money. So however you look at it, Disney don't look good.
No, and it will have to change the way deals are now made, won't it? Like, people are going to be a lot more sceptical before signing up to do big projects.
Yeah. Well, and I genuinely believe that this is probably sort of born of the fact that her contract had sort of locked her in to do however many films with them, and this is the last one. And she'd probably agreed to this a long time ago. And if they've sort of not amended it to reflect the fact that it's being released differently, they're going to have to face that. You know, Disney are going to have to own up to that and, you know, make it right. So, I mean, we'll see. But
interesting.
It is very interesting. And, you know, you can find a lot more information online if you want to read more about that. But sort of a fly-in tour of it, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that sort of leads into the next item I had was...
I ruined.
No, I'll do it and then I'll come back to the first one.
Okay.
So the next one is, we've got another Hollywood lawsuit going on.
Yes.
Have you heard about this? Yeah,
I think. Yes.
We've got Bam Margera suing Jackass Forever. I'm going to call it Jackass. I know it's Jackass, but like you said...
It sounds awful.
It sounds weird. Jackass Forever. It's specifically targeted at Johnny Knoxville, the film's producer Spike Jonze, and the director Jeff Tremaine.
Yeah.
So...
Do you... This is a really complicated one because it's not as simple. Do you follow Bam on any social media or anything?
No, I don't. Not
so
really.
Basically, the last couple of years has just been literally insane. Like, he is not well. He's really mentally unwell.
I'm sort of aware of that general thing. And, like, I mean, the details that are sort of coming out now about what allegedly happened is...
Some of the stuff that he's coming out with and was doing on... But then also you hear both sides of the story. You hear... Because he's okay. He's on talking terms with Steve-O, but he's really, really good at out for Johnny Knoxville. And I feel like, I don't know, it's one of those situations you'll never know the ins and outs of it because you're not in their friendship circle. But I can see why he would be upset. But on the other hand, he did really, really kind of, he didn't help himself. Before it was even a concept, he was rubbing everyone up the wrong way.
This is the thing. And, you know, so... We'll go over the bare bones of it quickly, and then I think there's definitely sort of reason to get into it a little bit more. But Bam basically claims that he was fired for taking prescribed medication. He's on Adderall for his attention deficit disorder. He claims that he was fired because he tested positive for Adderall, which, especially in the US, a lot of people abuse it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But he has a prescription for it. So, you know, but he's claiming that's why he was fired. And he's also saying that they forced him to sign a, you know, whatever papers saying that he'd been terminated. He apparently was forced to sign them while he was in a mental health facility, which, if true, is quite troubling. As of sort of earlier, when I was sort of just checking up on this, Johnny Knoxville's not really commented, other than a little while ago, he just said that he just wishes Bam well and wants him to get better. So he, on the one hand, Johnny Knoxville has been a bit tight-lipped, but he's come off as quite sort of classy about it. I mean, if what Bam is saying is true, then, you know, he's basically upset that they've used his ideas and some of his sort of input and his sort of intellectual property, and they've used that to make this film, and then they've cut him out of it,
which I understand why you would be upset.
And, you know,
that
the whole concept of Jackass is Bam's brainchild. You know, he started this whole thing, and it's a stupid thing, sure, but that's why people love it. And you know, I get that must be very, very difficult to a not be able to be a part of it because he's not well, but to have his, you know, essentially his lifelong friends, these guys have been friends for decades now, and to have them sort of cut him out as he sees it, that must be awful. But then you know, like you say, he's been off the rails for a while, and as much as, you know, he's on good terms with Steve-O, Steve-O's really turned his life around. And, you know, for all we know, they're sort of the way they've said to him, you can't be a part of this. That might be their way of trying to get him to just sort of get well so that he can be again. But, you know, again, a lot of the details here are sort of behind closed doors, and we're not going to know what's happened and what's been said and what's been done and why. But
he's not handled it well, though.
No, and it
just makes him look bad.
The fact that Johnny Knoxville's not said anything about this, he's not sort of come out and explained his side, or it doesn't look good for him. And I mean, that can only hurt the film when it comes out.
I mean, Bam's got a hardcore following, but I think it will do.
I still think it will get. I think people will watch it still, but I don't know. For me, it does sour it a little, because I've always seen it as the draw of it is you've got all these friends doing stupid stuff together, and sort of in the knowledge that they've cut out one of the main
founders.
That's quite upsetting, I think.
It will be interesting to see how the dynamic works.
We'll see. I mean, it's not exactly high cinema, is it? It is funny, and you know, I have
what you need at the moment.
I've seen all of them so far, and we'll see.
Well, whatever the outcome is, you know, we wish Bam all the best. It's not nice to see someone in that situation, but
no, and you know, I again, with some of the things he contends with are things I also contend with. And I understand how it is to sort of operate that way in the world and how difficult it can be. And you know, it must be awful for him to have to see this going ahead without him, whether it's down to his actions or not. That must be awful.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully he's well again soon, and you know,
we'll see him
again on the screen. Yeah. So we'll blitz through the rest of the news, because it's not as interesting, really. This was going to be the first little fluff piece, because it leads quite nicely into the Scarlett Johansson thing. The Suicide Squad has come out, the new DC film. It's got really good reviews, but it has not done well at the box office. Have you seen this?
I've not seen the films. I'm not a DC fan by any merit, but I feel like it's probably linked to what we were just talking about, you know, with people maybe not feeling comfortable about going to the cinema yet, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's that's the general consensus, is that the sort of HBO Max streaming is to blame. And again, with HBO Max, in several like sort of notable parts of the world, it's not available.
No,
I'm not sure. If I don't want to go to the cinema, I don't think I have anywhere that I can see this. And I mean, to be perfectly honest, I've kind of had it with the DC stuff. Like,
it's a mess.
I won't go into it, but there's a part of me that wants to boycott it because of Amber Heard. Because they have flat refused, Warner Brothers have just flatly refused to get rid of her, despite a lot of pressure from fans.
Yeah, it's baffling.
And they've got rid of Johnny Depp, who, by sort of most people's definition, Johnny Depp is the victim and Amber Heard is the abuser. And they fired him for being involved, but not her. And it's genuinely quite troubling that they don't see an issue with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's issues there. Generally, they're just not good films.
Yeah, I'm not a DC fan at all. Like, I just don't like the characters. Obviously, the exception being the Nolan trilogy, and Joker was great. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Rob Pattinson as Batman.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Batman has some great films. You know, Michael Keaton, he was a great Batman.
Yeah, the Tim Burton ones. A
couple of wonky ones. But then, you know, you've got your Nolan trilogy. They were excellent. Then you've got, like you say, Joker. I can't state enough how much I liked Ben Affleck's Batman. I thought he was a really good Bruce Wayne. He looked the part. I liked the sort of style he went for. He wasn't used properly. But that said, I do think that, just from the trailers, I think Robert Pattinson is going to be my favorite Batman.
Easily.
It just looks incredible, and I can't wait for it. And we'll move on to, you actually sent me this and I was so excited. Brendan Fraser has joined the cast of Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes.
We don't know much about it sort of at this moment in time, other than it's a Western crime drama, also featuring Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, and Jesse Plemons, who's great. All of them are, but Jesse Plemons I love. And that it's based on the true story of a series of at least 60 murders in Oklahoma in the 1920s.
So cool.
It's hard to see how that's going to be a bad film. I love Brendan Fraser. I love Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio, De Niro, and Jesse Plemons. I don't see how, you know, and just, I've looked a little bit into the kind of history of that.
Interesting, and, is it?
Yeah, very excited. Yeah,
it's really, he's on a comeback anyway. Like, apparently, I've not seen it, but apparently he's been doing a TV series which has been really well received, and everyone's like, oh my god, like, Brendan Fraser, he can act. He's like, well, yeah, he can act, he just had a very rough patch in his life. And it's nice to see people not, because he's an easy target, you know, to take the mickey out of, but he genuinely,
he was for a while, and I think people have sort of understood now that he's been through some awful things.
Hell.
And he, again, he's one of those actors that he's done a lot of films that were sort of middling. He's also done some great films, and he can act. Yes, he's been in films where his acting is not great, but he's also done some great acting. And just the fact of the things he's been through and the things he's had to come through to get back to where he is now, I just think everyone who has a soul should be rooting for him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, just mega excited to see him back sort of among the A-list.
That's a big film to get, but for your first, well, really is your kind of first one back. That's huge.
It is, and I think, in a sense, I mean, he's still got a name. That's the thing, is yes, he's not done a lot, but he's still a big name in Hollywood, and I think his name still carries weight with audiences.
He's a respected man, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know, like we saw that he's been cast, and yes, he's not done anything that we've seen recently, but you instantly go, oh, that'll be really exciting to see him again.
Yeah.
So it draws more attention to the film, because I didn't know that was being made until then. So
no, you know. He's got that Nick Cage draw to him, though, where like Nicolas Cage has come back and he's making these crazy, some of them, you know, are good. Some of them are terrible, but
yeah. There is one trailer that I wanted to talk about, that is a genuine new trailer. So, just for those of you listening, I looked up new trailers, or I thought I looked up new trailers. I was actually looking at trailers from 6 months ago and got really confused. And then Jack said, I don't think they're new trailers. And I said, no, you're right. There is one new trailer, though, that I saw for He's All That. Have you heard of it, Jack?
I watched it after you told me about it. And oh, it's a bit painful and a bit shocking, actually. Say shocking, that's a bit of an extreme. But
No, it's not extreme at all. That's exactly what I was going to say. So anyone who's been following Corner of Film since I sort of started or has gone back and read them, the first list I did was 10 times movies have glossed over predatory behaviours. And She's All That was one of those.
Yes.
So the premise is, if you've not seen it, Freddie Prinze Jr., it's like a 90s sort of rom-com classic. Freddie Prinze Jr., he sort of has a bet with his friend, Paul Walker, who, you know, he has this bet that he can make the most unpopular girl in school the most popular girl by taking her to the prom and whatever. And it just sends this message of like, oh, this ugly weirdo is actually beautiful if she makes an effort and puts on some makeup and starts hanging out with the right people.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. It's a disgusting film. And you can dismiss that as like sort of 90s like sensibilities. Mm. And it's iffy, but you can sort of look at it as, well, that was long enough ago, I guess, that we can sort of dismiss it. The fact that this film is being remade is horrendous. And what they've done is they've done that classic Hollywood thing of, well, we'll switch the genders, then it's fine. No. Yeah. Two wrongs does not make a right.
No.
You can't just go, oh, well, do you know what? We'll just make it a man that's being manipulated and then it's fine.
Yeah.
No, it's awful. That's just a terrible, terrible thing to do. And yeah, I just...
A lot of the, you know, the audience it's aimed at won't know that either because they're too young for that. And it's kind of come full circle because it's the same director as Mean Girls, which is obviously humongous. And it's kind of... girls of that age kind of discover it and then, you know, they love it and whatever, which is fair enough. It's a good film.
It just feeds into this thing of it just portrays toxic behaviors to people who might be impressionable. And I it's baffling to me that this has been greenlit. It's baffling to me that this is getting any attention. Showing these sorts of behaviors is one thing, but sort of it essentially glorifies it. It teaches people that, you know, these sorts of behaviors are fine if you love someone. That's never fine. It's never fine to manipulate someone. It's never fine to, like, I just don't get it. But there we go. He's All That. If you're thinking of watching it, maybe don't.
Yeah.
So we're on to Jack. We're back round. It's this time again. Did you bring a pet peeve?
I have a pet peeve.
Go on then, hit me with it.
It's one, I don't know why it took me so long to notice this one, because it happens in pretty much every film ever, but it's when people are driving and they don't look at the road. They're just like in full-on conversation with the person in the passenger seat.
Yeah, just constantly like looking away from what they're doing. Yeah,
it's
terrifying.
So stressful.
Yeah, can you imagine in real life you're sat in a car with someone, you're just in the passenger seat having a nice time and they are staring at you.
Eyes locked.
I can't. That's the stuff of nightmares. That's a great one.
Surely, if I was a director, or even if I'm not, as a film goer, like it's one of them, like everyone, if you ask anyone, like who's watching a film and that happens, at least some one person will go, oh my god, like look at the road. Like, how is that not someone's job on set to be like, right, okay, action, also please look at the road because you're going to die otherwise.
Yeah, and it's just such a glaring thing, isn't it? That
it is weird.
Yeah, that's a really good one. That's,
who makes eye contact when they talk nowadays as well? Like, come on.
It is uncomfortable looking someone in the eyes, especially after, you know, like a year of not having to.
Yeah.
So I've got one too.
Hit me.
Guns firing with no recoil or muzzle flash.
Yeah.
Like, again, surely on the set of any action film or whatever, or to be fair, if you're in America, everyone's a gun expert because you can just walk around with one.
Yep.
Why would you? It just feeds into this sort of misconception that, like, this is how you handle a weapon, and
you just blast it.
It's a casual thing, and it glorifies violence essentially. Yeah. And it just sort of spreads this misinformation that you just get a gun, you just point it, and just, you know, it's really odd. And
it is weird, yeah.
Yeah, I just think anything like that, if you do it realistically, at least you're not spreading misinformation. Whereas,
yeah, good point.
You know, if you make it seem like something it's not, I think that is quite that is where it begins to get dangerous.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, that was been mine. I've seen it in
good
a few
one.
Things and it's been annoying me, so yeah. We're on to shout outs. I don't know if this is a segment, but I feel like it's too small to be a segment, really.
I also don't have many friends to shout out.
Well, I've got not a friend as such, but I've got a sort of another one to shout out,
an associate.
Yeah, well, see, I enjoyed it last week. I thought it was fun. I know
it
you shouted
good,
out
yeah.
a literal baby.
I did, yeah.
But that was
he
fun.
Loved it, by the way.
We'll have to get him on. As soon as he can talk, he's on the podcast.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So did you manage to find one? Do you want to shout anyone at all?
Let's shout out.
Well, you've mentioned Liz a lot. Why don't you just shout Liz?
Ugh.
Not too loud, though, because she'll probably come running into the room. But
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, big ups, Liz, my number one girl, my ride or die.
Yep. Hi, Liz. It's me, Niall. Hello. That's a shout from me, too.
She says hello in the future.
Whoa. Transcendent. Whoa.
Yeah.
Mine is actually not a personal one. My shout out for this week is a guy called August Radio Project. He's nice. A musician. He used to be in a band called Ghouls that I loved, and they split up. He did a bit of time traveling, and he's back. He's in Brighton now, which is close to where we are, Jack.
Nice.
He made the intro outro music that I use for the podcast through his website, imakesounds.com.
Great name.
It's basically a platform for content creators to find and download royalty-free music to use in videos and podcasts like this. And it's also, he's finding a way, I don't know how it works, you'd have to ask him, but he is finding a way to basically pay musicians to contribute their music to the website.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, he's doing a lot of good work in
that
sense. He also writes and releases music under the name August Radio Project, sort of like bohemian kind of acoustic,
okay,
quite upbeat stuff. Yeah, definitely go and check him out. That's at August Radio Project and imakesounds.com if you're looking for some royalty-free music to download.
It's always handy.
Yeah. Okay, well, that actually brings us to the end of this week's podcast.
Oh,
it's been great, Jack. It's been just
yeah,
wonderful.
It's been a good one.
It has. Don't forget, you can follow Corner of Film on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Podbean. That's at Corner of Film just about everywhere. Drop us a like, comment, follow, whatever you've got. We really appreciate it. And you can also follow me personally on Twitter at Lord of the Grey. If you're interested in what else I've got going on, there's some big news coming about my writing work and what I'm going to be working on. So I'll keep you posted.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my turn for the quote this week, Jack.
Yeah,
it is. And I found a great quote from a film that I remember as being quite bad, but people love it. So I'll let you be the judge of the quote.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Good luck trying to top last week's.
Well, brace yourself. Sometimes I wonder, will God ever forgive us for what we've done to each other? Then I look around and I realise God left this place a long time ago.
Oof.
That's from Blood Diamond, 2006.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Leo.
Oh, nice. Well, there we go.
We have been Niall and Jack from Corner of Film, and you have been... I need to come up with a good sign off line. So
we'll get there.
Yeah. Send a message to the Corner of Film accounts, any of them, Twitter, Instagram are the best ones. Message me on there with a recommendation for a sign off. And if it's a good one, I'll give you a shout next time.
Ooh.
Whew. I think that's got to be goodbye now.
That is goodbye.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Au revoir.